Welcome in, Loons fans, to another edition of the weekly Match Day Preview Show. Jonathan Harrison here, joined once again by Chief Development Officer Manny Lagos. Manny, how are we doing today? Not so gorgeous day, but we're here.
Yeah, it's a nice day, beautiful week. I think spring has officially arrived, so which is nice, starting to green up. And we're playing soccer and get ready for a great, I think, spring into summer here.
Absolutely. By the way, you couldn't have asked. We'll get to this game a little bit later on in the show, but we couldn't have asked for much better weather than we had on Saturday at Allianz Field.
It was gorgeous night. Yeah, it was gorgeous. And the fans were awesome. They felt, I think, you know, a special moment of getting that kind of an April night, getting ready for, I think, what's come at Allianz Field over the next couple months.
Absolutely. So as I said, we'll get into that match. We'll recap that match in a little bit on the show. We'll also preview this weekend's game against Charlotte, a Sunday match, a rare Sunday match for the squad coming up later in the show. But let's jump into some general discussion about the last weekend of Major League Soccer action. Plenty to discuss. I want to start the most consequential game in the Western Conference. It was 1-2 this weekend up in Vancouver. Ended up all in the Galaxy's favor. Vancouver might have felt a bit unlucky to lose that one the way they did, but again, it was Ricky Pooch, Dejan Jovelic, and Paintsil doing it again for LA Galaxy. How dangerous are they? I think at this point we can kind of wash away any of the doubts that we may have had about the LA Galaxy this season. It seems like this is a very different squad than we've seen the past couple of years.
Yeah, big win, big 3 points on the road. Certainly dealing with some adversity on the road. Obviously, the same thing with their big win against Kansas City. You would argue their El Tráfico game, they played even and were a little hard done by probably a bad PK call. So for them, off to an amazing start, and you're correct, their front three has been outstanding. They had to weather, I think, a good Vancouver team at home right now. And then second half, they really just went after it. You know, that pass by Ricky Pug was outstanding. It's kind of showing his qualities. The defense held up. And then Paintsil seems to be in and around everything that they do offensively now. And Djokovic is a finisher, and he's finding ways to finish and be that number nine that they've wanted for the last couple of years.
Does that result in the way that game played out change your feelings about, or I guess early season feelings about Vancouver this season? Because we knew going into the match, there was questions about the difficulty of their schedule heading into this one. Now they faced, it seems like, a real LA Galaxy team, and they got thumped a little bit, 3-1. I mean, you can feel a little bit hard done by it, but it was still, the scoreline says 3-1. Do you feel any differently about Vancouver after last week, or was this just running into a tough opponent?
I think it's just running a tough opponent. You know, again, I think the West is wide open. I think there's a lot of teams like ourselves fighting for identity, fighting for to be competitive, and I think Vancouver's right in that mix. I mean, if you looked at the game, they actually played very well. They played with a good tempo. They created a lot of chances. Brian White scored a goal, but missed a lot as well. And again, for me, this game could have gone either way. It was about kind of taking moments of the game when you were doing well and the ways of attacks you had and converting. And again, I think the Galaxy, you know, have really shown early on that they're going to be competitive in every game. They're not going to be out of any game. And they certainly have figured out a way to kind of make it a tough night on teams. So for me, I think Vancouver still has shown some really good qualities and that they're a team that's going to be tough in the West.
Yeah, they didn't drop down too far in the standings. They basically just flip-flopped spots in the Western Conference at the top. LA now on 15 points, Vancouver on 13 alongside Houston on 13. The other game in the Western Conference that got a lot of eyeballs, 72,000 fans at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City to see Kansas City and Inter Miami. Got off in the favor of Kansas City right away. Eric Tommy scoring in the 6th minute. But then a back and forth game kind of ensued between these two sides. Diego Gomez scoring in the 18th minute off a wonderful assist by Lionel Messi. Messi puts Inter Miami up 2-1 in the 51st minute with an absolute golazo of a goal. You can't ask for much better from one of the best to ever play the game. But then Eric Tommy, a couple minutes later, answers back in the 58th minute. But then Luis Suarez, who's really driving home a chance, an early chance at MVP conversation, scores in the 71st minute for the game winner in front of a massive crowd in Kansas City. I think it was the second biggest crowd in world soccer this weekend. Impressive showing for Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're um, You know, as a soccer fan, I'm always torn because obviously they've created a great environment, their stadium is really a tough place to play. But I think this is the reality, the Messi effect, the reality that we have the greatest player in the history of the sport playing in our league. And it has impact on so many different levels in so many different ways. And this is just one example where you have a home team that is moving their site to allow maybe new fans or fans that want to be exposed to a great game. And the game itself didn't disappoint. The superstardom of Messi was on full display. And then obviously it really, to me, was another special night for soccer, and just kind of shows example of maybe what happened in the 70s and the build and growth. Whereas now when these games happen, I think people know soccer. I think they know the mm-hmm. event. And I think this was an example where I think the product on the field lived up to the hype. I thought both teams battled, both teams had chances to win the game, and both teams, kind of played to their strengths. And ultimately, Miami's a really good team, and they've got some superstars, and they stepped up on the night.
I'm going to put the business aspects of this to the side, because business-wide, it makes sense to move to a bigger stadium when you know you can fill it out. If you're the home side, the squad on the field, the coach on the sideline, do you like the idea of switching home grounds just to suit – you know, a bigger audience, because one player who's going to draw in that many fans will fill out the stadium? Do you like that idea, or would you rather stay at what is generally one of the tougher places to play in Major League Soccer, at Children's Mercy Park? Would you, if you're the home side, would you have rather stayed at Children's Mercy Park, or do you like the idea of playing in front of more people?
It's an unfair question, particularly for me, knowing so much is like I'm torn, because
right.
Taking away the business side, it is really hard when the reality of our league, it's amazing. And the league is growing at leaps and bounds, but it still has to create a sustainable business model to survive. And mm-hmm. again, I mentioned to you that, you know, there was a great trajectory of potential soccer growth in the 70s that did explode too fast and didn't have that sustainable bond underneath. And it went away for several years. We obviously had indoor soccer, but I'm still part of that, you know, era of saying, hey, it's really important. We won't always get it right, but to combine the fact that we want to make this an amazing competitive league, an amazing product, but it does have to have the elements of the business side. So whether it's the reality of 70,000 fans from a ticket sales standpoint, or just from the brand of getting more people to fall in love with soccer via Messi, via a great game, it's hard for me to not keep that in mind. But to answer your question, there's no doubt your home field is your home field. You know, playing in front of a tight pack, 20,000 people that are true KC fans versus Messi fans is a competitive advantage. So there's no doubt that comes into play on a night where you're trying to navigate the realities of this business, which is both sports and generating revenue to put the product in the field.
Yeah, I'm kind of two minds of it myself. Just like I would, if I have that tough of a home ground, I don't want to move away from it too often, but again, it makes sense to draw in more fans and get them hooked on the sport and show them that, hey, this is here every week, week in and week out. You can come show up. What other games from this weekend kind of took your eye as you look across the schedule or the scoreboard from this last weekend?
Yeah, I think thinking about the East, I thought the Montreal Cincinnati game was intriguing. Certainly Cincinnati, obviously, you know, their dominance last year seems to now be off to a tough start in terms of the kind of points per game they were getting last year, particularly even early. So, and Montreal with their kind of unique schedule where they had to play on the road so much and then to come home for their first game and play really well against traditionally, at least last year, one of the better teams in the league, I think is really an impressive start now officially for them to the season. You know, even though they kind of dropped a couple of those road games at the end of their road run. So, I really enjoyed seeing that result and seeing them get off to on a good start at home.
How much trouble are San Jose in? 3-0 loss this last weekend against Colorado. Now off to a 1-7 start. That's just you can't get off to much worse of a start unless it's 0-8. But that's not a good start for San Jose. That's a big uphill climb for them. How much trouble are the Quakes in this season?
I mean, it's probably the only white here is that it's early and they know what they are and they know they've got a big hill to climb. But like you said, the hill is probably more of a mountain at this point when you're talking about this many games in a season with one win and no ties. So And losing to a conference opponent at home 3-0 is really probably deflating. So it's a big mountain. I don't think you should sugarcoat that. I think this has been a really tough start for him.
Colorado getting the 3-0 win there. 12 points for them on the season. Fifth place, Chris Armas off to a pretty decent start when there was a lot of changes in Colorado this offseason.
Yeah, particularly with that first game against Portland, where I think they really kind of got run over the field that day. So former teammate Chris Armas, great national team player, great defensive midfielder. Obviously, he's had a trajectory of a coaching career both domestically here and in Europe, and now he's back in this league, and I think a lot of people are cheering for him. So impressive start for them in terms of just how they've handled some of the early adversity, and certainly to go on the road against a team that was desperate for points at home and to kind of win the way they did was really impressive.
Warmer weather means green grass and plenty of soccer. Starting in May, Minnesota United has a full slate of academy and youth camps throughout the spring and summer months. Come enjoy the game, demonstrate your skills, and take your game to the next level with MNUFC's licensed academy staff. Visit the Camps and Combines page on MNUFC.com for more information. Absolutely. So let's jump into this weekend's game for Minnesota, or last weekend's game for Minnesota, hosting Houston. Gorgeous night, exciting atmosphere again because of just a packed stadium. Your general thoughts on the match? I felt for me, it was, again, a match that was there for the taking for Minnesota, but a slow start kind of doomed them.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a tale of two halves in terms of the first half. You know, I think it's okay to be honest and say the rhythm wasn't there, particularly the rhythm to play forward, the rhythm to get going. You know, we had a new back line, and it took, I think, some time for those players to get into the game. And not saying we were playing poorly, but we really were kind of kind of navigating a new lineup, maybe a little bit less experienced players, and just get into it. And I don't think we wanted to play that way. I think we got to give a little credit to Houston for how they played and the fact that we couldn't get going the way we wanted to, particularly at home. And that first 45 minutes was really, not our best. And I think it was a tale of two halves. And I think although it was kind of an unlucky own goal, it was probably in their Houston's best moment of the game in terms of how they were attacking, in terms of how they were limiting us getting any tempo that we wanted in the game. So there's no doubt. I think that the game and the night presented what I thought was an opportunity for the team to kind of play much better in the second half. And there's no doubt they did.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's kind of narrow in here. Hugo Bacharach, club's first pick in the Super Draft, debut on Saturday night. I thought he was excellent. I thought he performed well. Had some rookie moments, but you couldn't have asked for more from a rookie getting his debut, a tough spot. But he stood tall, especially with the inexperience on the left side of that defense with him and Padelford on that side. They really did a good, they did a decent job on the night.
I really enjoyed how they grew into the game as well. Again, I think we'll go into more of the second half, which I thought the group had such great energy fight. I thought the tempo of the game, the hunger to get back into it and to really, react, which I don't love we had to react, but we did. And the reaction was great, that 45 minutes. And those two specifically, I think they just got better and better as the game went on. Hugo's feet, very composed, was doing a really good job of kind of cleaning up, I think, any kind of middle third 50-50 battles that we needed to have to win the ball and keep our attack momentum going. And I think Devin really showed some great one-on-one qualities, high up the field, getting good crosses in. Again, really, I thought, continuing to push the tempo and waves of attacks to get back in the game. And I thought by the end of the game, my view would be, you know, it's exciting because it just is another point where you have two young people that, you know, you're excited for their future and excited for the potential they have with the team, which is all you can ask for, particularly with somebody in their first ever MLS game, where there's going to be a lot of nerves, a lot of nervousness. And, you know, again, there was some positive within that tough loss we had.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of Bachrock and getting him through the draft, is that one area of roster building that this league is starting to come around to, is building the defense through the draft? Because we see the designated players across the league are generally the attackers or midfielders. Generally, very few come to be teams. Generally, very few spend designated player spots on defenders. Is that one of the areas that teams are starting to kind of focus in on in the draft? And I guess through homegrowns, is building on the defense?
Well, I would separate it out. I think that the draft is continues and will continue to be a great avenue to find and get talent from, just because, you know, if you look at the development of the country, you've got MLS just growing by leaps and bounds. You've got USL pushing, you've got USL2, and then you've got the college game where you've got these coaches and these facilities that are great environments, and they're pushing for year-round training, they're pushing for year-round games, they're pushing for their athletes to become better developed over 4 years. And so I think my first answer is on the college draft. It's only going to get better, I think, and it's only going to be another model for us to see where we can find talent and hopefully have it become part of Minnesota United and grow into being successful on the field. In terms of the second question, which is specifically about the balance of offense and defensive players, yeah, the league needs to evolve. Teams need to evolve. You can't win if you don't stay organized and compact and tough and don't get scored on. There's no doubt about it. And so that means you can't just look at that top line of defense. You've got to look at the middle and the back and the goalie. And there's no doubt that teams that are going to do well in this league are going to have a balanced squad, offensively, defensively, young, old. And so all those things come into play. And there's no doubt, you know, the competitive side, if you have these great attackers, you're going to have to navigate both individually and collectively having great defenders.
Yeah, absolutely. So back to the game at hand that we were talking about, Minnesota-Houston. Tale of two halves. Was it, I know you mentioned a couple times, the tempo changed and it felt like things were kind of connecting a little bit better in the second half. Was that it, or was there some tactical differences or changes for you that Minnesota put on the field that really changed how the second half played out? Because it really did feel, as you said, tale of two halves, where Minnesota were kind of out of it in the first half. It was a little bit back and forth, but it felt like Houston did a good job of making Minnesota play the way they wanted them to play. But in the second half, Minnesota kind of took over proceedings and really had a chance to run away with this one.
Yeah, I think, you know, the first tactical thing was the sub, you know, Alejandro, who didn't have his best night. And I don't know if there was an injury there as well, but unleashing Asani and having him come into the game and having us allow him to get up the field higher and win balls and press higher and now really pin Houston in and be hungry to win 50-50 balls. So I think there was a combination of that tactical change at the beginning of the half was incredibly important because it got us going from the very first kickoff. We were ready to attack in ways. And then it kept going via the tactical changes in the subs and then a few kind of tweaks that he made throughout that second half to really allow us to keep the energy level up and go. So for me, you know, that response to just, you know, maybe not being as hungry or as sharp as we want to be in the first half, it felt like the second half was a totally different vibe. And you know, really, I think to your point, the goal, and very much like RSL, it felt like we're going to go on and win it because of the way the guys played. And it was just unfortunate because Houston's goal was against the run of play. It was kind of one of those kind of odd moments where we lost a tough ball in a tough spot. And we had a player I don't think was that sharp on the day, but had an individual brilliant moment. But I didn't think we stopped there. I thought we almost had a couple chances. And I thought we still had that same mentality and we really had that same tempo all the way through the game. And, you know, the guys, and I think the fans felt it, but I think they walked off the field giving every ounce of their energy they could. There's no doubt we wanted the win. There's no doubt we wanted a tie, and these nights are tough. But just the arc of the game was, for me, just a tale of two halves where we couldn't quite get going in the first half, left everything on the field in the second half. I'm positive our expected goals and our possession were through the roof. And then you could say, you know, we had an unlucky second half to not at least get a point, and probably very much for sure probably deserved all three.
Yeah, the you mentioned expected goals in possession. Minnesota 55% on the end of the night, 2.4 expected goals for Minnesota to 0.4 for Houston. So kind of shows how the balance of that game was played out as well. Once again, Minnesota, 23 shots to Houston, 7, second game in a row with 20 plus shots in a game. And they vaulted up the total shots category in the league and are sitting pretty high at that or at this point in the season. So, yeah, the stats kind of tell the story that Minnesota really had a number of chances, especially in that second half, that could have gone Minnesota's way.
Jonathan, I do want to say a little bit about that. You know, the shots are good and it's encouraging, but we've got to be careful here because there's a model here where if you have the ball in good spots and you have a good chance for a potential kind of scoring chance, you really want your guys to create good chances that are also effective, or they create another chance or another wave of attack. And so I would say some of our shots have been really outstanding. I think some of our shots have almost sometimes slowed our momentum, and our guys need to be a little bit more sharp about when and how they're choosing to shoot, and really understanding that, you know, it's not black and white, but certainly kind of making good decisions and with the percentage of trying to score. I think we can do a little better at our decision making with our shots. So maybe we get that number a little bit more, but we have more effective chances to score.
How do you go about coaching that and telling your players without taking away some of the offensive firepower that they've had this season? How do you go about, I guess, kind of coaching them to take those smarter chances instead of just taking, you know, the pot shots?
It's a great question. And it really does start with the training tactically, the habits of training, the habits of how you're making decisions, the habits of getting guys excited about making good decisions in a game, and then believing in those decisions. And then at the end of the day, you're going to make mistakes, and how the players react to those mistakes or react to the decision that maybe wasn't quite the right one, and how quickly and hungry both individually and collectively you're going to react to kind of either win the ball back or move on to the next play. So it's a little bit of everything, but it certainly doesn't all happen within the game itself. There's definitely a reason why you have these big build-up training sessions for the week. It is certainly to recover and get your body ready to run again for those tough 90 minutes, but it's also tactically, and I always bring it up, habits of the individual and group are so important going into a game because that kind of gives you that competitive chance to win over the other team.
Absolutely. Franco Fragapane, as you mentioned, he scored the equalizing goal in the 70th minute, where it looked like Minnesota had gained the momentum and we're going to kind of take this game by the horns and move on with it. But obviously Kowalczyk scores in the 77th minute. I want to talk about the Fragapane goal. His quality once again shined through on the night throughout that second half, but the buildup play was pretty impressive from Minnesota to that goal.
Yeah, it was really nice because it came at a time when we were really creating a lot of good chances. We're moving the ball well. I mean, Fraga came in and he was just really lively. He was just picking up the ball. His tempo was good, passing it, moving, getting forward. And what I really liked about that play was, you know, Will and Robin really had gotten involved and were finding the ball in good spots. And the next thing you know, the two of them are combining where, you know, I think Will is more of our traditionally kind of making sure we keep the ball moving. He loves to break lines, but at the same time, he understands that, you know, he's got other guys sometimes to really be the creative passers. But at the same time, when the game needs creativity, it's got to find it from somebody. And Will did a great job of really looking at a square pass wide and seeing Robin making the run and breaking the line against two defenders in a tempo that then allowed Fraga to be the late runner. And Robin had a great first touch, saw Fraga. You could kind of see it, took another touch. And so his eyes had already seen Fraga two touches before and knew exactly where to put the ball, and Fraga did a great job finishing. So it was one of those goals where the tempo and the spacing and just the execution was outstanding. A really fun goal to watch.
I loved watching Fragapane play on the night. I mean, he had a number of chances, had the goal, obviously, but the late chance late in the second half there where he's kind of just like laying out and on the half volley and almost gets it past Steve Clark, but Steve Clark has to lay out his entire body to save it. That was an impressive shot that you felt like should have gone in because of the way the game had played out, but unfortunately just didn't. But Fragapane was exceptional on Saturday. Another guy who I liked watching.
He really was. And Steve Clark was also exceptional.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, you got the one in the first half with Will Trapp that, like, I mean, probably any other day just goes in without Steve getting a foot to it. And then, you know, their defender did a great job of saving off the line. I still think it was probably in, but I think this is a reality of that we don't have goal line technology. And if it's not caught on the field and there's not good video evidence, you know, it's not going to be clear and obviously a mistake. So unfortunately, I probably back that, even though I think it was over the line, I understand why that goal didn't happen. And then the second one Steve had was the header from Tani, yep, off his hand, off the crossbar. Again, you know, he's been a journeyman, great goalie in this league for a long time. And these are nights where you remind yourself why he has been in the league so long. He did a great job of, dealing with the fact that we should have probably had three or four goals on a different night and a different goalie.
And Tanny scoring or almost getting that header shortly after he came on. It just felt like this kid's just going to keep scoring and having these big moments as a super sub. But he didn't score the goal, but he still had some excellent link-up play throughout the time that he was on the field, continuing to show his development off the bench and showing that he is going to be a good striker to watch in the future.
Yeah, I thought that was a great chance. I thought right after that, too, he had another one where he made a great run in between the two center backs off their shoulder, really aggressive. I think he can probably, you know, wish he had it back. Technically, he's got to be a little bit sharper about getting that header down and making sure when you get that kind of opportunity, you get it on goal. But his movement on that play was outstanding. And again, like I said, as you start to think about the game and we were rehashing, we just had some outstanding waves of attacks and chances throughout the whole second half. And again, their goal was probably really harshly at the different time around a play. But again, I'm also think I talked to you on the pregame show. It was really important for us to put a little bit more of a 90-minute performance together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of our loss was we couldn't quite do that in the first half, that kind of pushed us into the adverse situation we were in the second half, which led to the unlucky kind of scoreline, because in the end, we should have won. We should have responded and got it. And I think the guys did a great job. You know, I get the staff, the guys, I think, and the fans felt it at the end of the game. It was a tough loss and it felt like a loss, but I think the fans were really, really involved in feeling like the guys really tried to make amends from us being down at halftime.
That the first half woes are something we've talked about a couple times on the show over the season already. How do you go about changing that when it feels like that's when you have these first half, these slow first halves, but the second half is drastically different. The team takes over in the second half and really feels like at the end of the match, they were unlucky several times to not come out with wins or draws. How do you change that so it's not like so you don't go in or leave every match feeling like, man, if only we just had a better first half?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, mentioned to you, that this was a tough ask just based on the fact that we had a lot of a new back line and we had, you know, to kind of navigate some adversity within, you know, just having to change lineup. So sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's the opponent. Sometimes it's just the night. So I think it's a little bit early to kind of answer the reasons why. And I think more in terms of changing, I think that we talked about, you know, the mentality and the habits and the technical and tactical stuff all kind of uniting and combining. And, you know, you're going to deal with adversity now so you can get better at it later in the season. And so I think that's part of what's going to happen now, hopefully, is that we're building into becoming a better, tough mental group that's ready to play for 90 minutes.
Absolutely. Before we move on to this weekend's matchup, any other notes you wanted to discuss from the 2-1 loss to Houston?
No, there was not too much. You know, like I said, you got the bitter taste, but I did leave, you know, as a fan and part of the club, proud of the guys' effort at the end of the game. There's a lot of guys that, you know, were really put as much energy they could to try to get us that 3 points. And I think sometimes that's all you can ask for. And as fans, hopefully they appreciate that, because I think that's an important quality that we're trying to grow as a club.
Absolutely. Before, so now Loons now look to break a 3-match winless run, but it doesn't get any easier because you're going out to Carolina to take on Charlotte, who haven't lost at home in regular season play, playoffs, or any other kind of play since May 20th of last year. And even that was a close call. It took a 93rd minute Hanny Mukhtar penalty kick for Nashville to down Charlotte 2-1 last year. So it's been a long time since this club, Charlotte FC, have lost at home. That is as tough of an environment, apparently, as we can come across in this league. They haven't made the playoffs. It's been a little bit tricky of a start to their club's life. But so far, at home, they've been electric.
Yeah, I just my brain's partly, Jonathan, just went to how amazing this league is from a, you know, just thinking about the different types of identity, the different type of clubs. You know, we're going to the South,
mm-hmm.
and it's on turf and it's in a football stadium, but it's a great, you know, they get 35,000 plus a game, tough place to play, adversity all over the place. And, you know, in some ways we want to deal with these kind of situations because we'll grow from them no matter what. And it's exciting to go down there and try to get 3 points in an environment that's tough. So it makes me think about how hard this league is and how quickly and how fast you have to get ready again and put last weekend behind you and prepare and get ready for really tough ask for our club to get some points down in a tough place. So it's another one of those ones where, you know, this is such a unique league. And I will say we have our strengths and weaknesses of the league in terms of our global landscape of other leagues are run differently and have a different model. But it really amazes me the parity and just the reality of how hard it is to navigate this league. And I say that more like an exciting way. You know, it's exciting for the sport. It's exciting for our club that we're going to play against all these different kind of teams with identities. And you just brought up the reality of a newer franchise that's had some up and downs, but you know, they have a new coach this year in Dean Smith, who seems to have gotten them off to a good start, particularly in terms of their structure and their organizational defensive side. And then last game, it seemed like they kind of really put it all together and really had a good win against Toronto 3-2.
I'll get to Dean Smith in a second. I just kind of want to pick up your point about just exciting times for this sport in this country, to bring it back to the conversation we had at the beginning of the show and 70,000 fans turning up in Kansas City to see Messi. The fact that Charlotte, 3 years in and not a whole lot of success on the field for them, are still averaging over 35,000 fans, which is, I think, second in the league behind only Atlanta, just goes to show you the interest, the amount of interest that has grown in this sport, that it's, you're 3 years in, it's no longer the intrigue factor. You're no longer getting those fans showing up like, I wonder what this product looks like. It's now, these are fans showing up week in, week out because they like the product, whether it's good or not. They like the sport and they're excited where it's going. It's that's exciting to me as a soccer fan to see that happen week in and week out in a place like Charlotte that hasn't had a pro team or an MLS team ever. And so that's really exciting to see. But I want to now jump back to Dean Smith. His start in MLS, 3 wins, 3 losses, 2 draws, only have scored multiple goals in the game twice. And that was, the second one was coming, came this weekend, a 3-2 win in Toronto. We'll break that game down a little bit, but he's done some remarkable work despite having a very, very thin roster in Charlotte coming into the season.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they've done a good job. I mean, they've, like I said, I think he's started them off to be really organized defensively and really tough to break down. I think that's led to some good results. And I think, you know, this weekend is interesting for us because I thought they had their best offensive game last week and they seem to have a little bit more freedom in terms of how they're going forward and how they're kind of playing both sides of the ball. I think it was probably a 3-2 win over Toronto, but it felt like they probably could have won by a couple more goals. So we know we're going into a really tough place against a team that's played really well. And like you mentioned, they haven't lost in almost a year at home. And so it's a great matchup, I think, for us to bounce back in a way that we're going to have to be ready to play, ready to be organized, ready to tap, ready to defend, ready to deal with the tough environment of the fans and the turf.
Yeah, absolutely. Seventh in the Eastern Conference, 11 points on the season. It's been a nice start for Dean Smith, despite not having a whole lot to work with there. They do have some top-end talent that you like to watch. Kerwin Vargas, he's exciting in the attack, as well as Patrick Adjemian, who scored again this weekend in the 85th minute, was the game winner there that Toronto seemed to kind of just let off on that set piece after clearing and left a player wide open on the wing that just led to that goal. But Jalen Lindsay doing a good job tracking back and getting the ball back into play. Jalen Lindsay is a guy that Minnesota fans will not like to see this weekend after some some stints in Kansas City that really harmed Minnesota. But they've got some exciting players despite the lack of depth that they have on the roster.
Yeah, I think the Kerwin Vargas seems really lively. You know, he's Colombian, I believe, and I think he's just had a really good game last week. He looked like somebody that we're going to have to make sure we're aware of his speed, we're aware of his finishing. He seems like, as from a wide player, he wants to come in and be in the far post to get in the box, and he'll drift inside sometime to find chances. So he's somebody that, again, we'll have to be very aware of. And like you said, I'm not sure who starts up top, if it's him or Capetti, but Capetti's a little bit more of a kind of your workhorse guy right now. He's kind of been physical and hasn't quite, I don't know if he has a lot of goals yet, but it seems like he hasn't quite gotten off the mark. Ashley Westwood, quality player, connector in the midfield, you know, again, somebody that will set the tempo for them. And hopefully we can really deny him to having the ball and finding ways to play forward and make sure make him play back. And then we can get our lines up and squeeze and win the ball in good spots.
Yeah, Capetti, 6 goals last year, none this year so far. Seems like they're definitely missing Swiderski's attacking threat that he had last year for the club, but so far just the are no goals for Capetti yet this season. Adjemian scoring his second of the season, so we'll see who they start up top there. But yeah, they've got some quality for sure. How do you see this game playing out with how Minnesota like to set up with the high press, keeping the ball pinned in the attacking area, compared to what Charlotte do on the field?
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one because we probably should have mentioned this earlier, but this is our first ever matchup against them.
Yeah,
this
true.
Is our first ever time playing this team. So my brain is not as like, I know exactly. I tend to sometimes play over time. So it's a little bit of an unknown for me to see how it's going to play out. I just know we are going to have to be ready to be organized and play good defensively, whether that's by pressing or whether that's by winning the ball in good spots or that's our battling or 50-50. And then we're going to have to be really hungry to take our chances. You know, I think we're going to have to be brave and courageous in terms of when we go forward, when we win the ball in good spots and finishing our chances. Because when you're on the road, particularly right now, when you're trying to have a bounce back game against a team that's very confident, a good way to kind of, you know, recalibrate their kind of confidence is by finishing chances and making sure you hurt them when you do well, either on attacking phase or by winning the ball in good spots.
What's the key for going into a place that is so tough to go into that they haven't lost at home in almost a year at this point? What's the key for the roadside, especially when it's such a team that you've never played before? It's a roster that is very different from what they had last year, a coaching staff that's different. Everything's different from what they had last year. You have what, 8 games to kind of judge what they are at this point. And even that's still changing because of all the newness to their roster and their coaching staff. What's the key for Minnesota this weekend?
Yeah, I think my brain goes less to the tactical side. Maybe that's because it's our first time ever playing them in a real official MLS game. And it goes to like the mentality side. It goes to the set pieces. It goes to the fact that maybe my former playing days, my former as one as a coach, the turf is always such a different game. And so first and foremost, the little things will really matter. And I think about what I just mentioned, set pieces. I think about winning 50-50 balls. I think about not allowing yourself to give up a soft goal based on the bounce, the ball skipping differently, or you being a little bit thinking about you have to play differently on turf than grass. And ultimately, for me, it is going to be about us being organized and compact to press and win ball in good spots, and then take our chances. So those are really my keys right there. You know, I think it's one of those ones where, again, I think mentality has to be where we were the last 45 minutes at home, and kind of take it on the road with the reality that we're playing against a team at home that has had some good energy the last couple of games.
Absolutely. That game this weekend, 5 p.m. kickoff. You can watch it for free on MLS Season Pass, as well as on Fox Sports 1. You can listen to the call with Dan Terra and myself on 1500 ESPN. Pre-match show, 4:30 p.m., 5 p.m. kickoff this Sunday. A rare Sunday game for the Loons this weekend. That is before the Cali Classico at 7:15 p.m. LA Galaxy hosting San Jose Earthquakes, two very different teams in very different spots in that one. Is there another game this weekend that you're looking forward to?
I the two you just talked about, the Cali Classico, I think is you know, got massive relevancy with San Jose's start. And you know, I think for maybe some of our newer fans, I know our older fans know, but this was one of the original awesome mm-hmm. derbies of this league. And it's always hasn't disappointed. I could see San Jose pulling off an upset here, honestly, because of the fact that they tend to really get up for this game and play pretty well. I'm not sure what the overall matchup is in terms of history, but I think San Jose does a good job in the Clasico. And that New York Red Bulls LAFC game, you know, is intriguing because, you know, there's a lot of people out there who feel like Red Bulls have played some of the best soccer in the entire league this year. Against an LAFC team that we always know is tough to beat and a tough, tough team. So I'm really intrigued to see if the Red Bulls, you know, how they do against one of the better teams in the West.
Absolutely. I'm kind of looking forward to the Missouri derby there, Sporting Kansas City, St. Louis City. That one's always fun between those two sides. That one should be exciting to see how Sporting Kansas City bounce back from their disappointing result this last weekend and to see how St. Louis continue to climb up after a poor start to the season, after what was an otherworldly debut season last year.
Yeah, there's no doubt. That's a great one. That's a good one, obviously. Yeah, St. Louis got 3 points last week. I think they got through there. I'm not sure where that game's going to go. I it'll be interesting because I still think Kansas City played pretty well last weekend against Miami. So I still think they're on the up in terms of how they're playing. So that'll be a great game.
Absolutely looking forward to it, Manny. We'll talk to you next week. Good stuff this week. Looking forward to the match this weekend between Minnesota United and Charlotte FC. The first time these two clubs have played each other. Looking forward to it. Two very different teams, and it should be a fun one for sure.
Cheers. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, Manny. Thank you to the producing staff of Kyle Hayward, Grace Dearson, and Evan Endler for putting us on. Loons fans, we'll talk to you next week.